listening to Scopes Monkey Choir.
Okay, we're on. Yes, we are on.
Here we are, casting our pod.
Scopes Monkey Choir, the podcast where music and sound meet science and skepticism.
I'm Hai Ting.
I am Matt, and this is episode 77.
Welcome to episode 77.
Music evolves, kinda.
The evolution of music, not at all.
Not the evolution of music, but
the
vaguely,
rock evolution.
Not really.
Oh, no, we're going to talk... It just turns out, coincidentally, that all the studies that we're going to talk about today supposedly have something to do with evolution
or change or whatever.
Supposedly, we're basically going to like stand that up and knock it down, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But it is a funny coincidence.
It's a non-theme. We don't really usually do themes.
No, it was a coincidental theme.
Except that's not true, we do. All right, maybe we should shut up.
Coincidental theme.
Right.
But first, we're going to talk about something that's not even in the theme.
If you're listening to our podcast for the first time...
We apologize for everything that you have just heard.
But, you know, this is the format. Chat.
The format is no format.
But first, a citizen science, a cry for citizen science.
From a real scientist.
Yes. We have mentioned on occasion Daniel Levitin. Dan Levitin is a scientist who studies music.
A neuroscientist.
Yeah, music psychology. And he wrote an excellent book on the subject.
This is Your Brain on Music?
Yes. And he's awesome. Anyway, he has a study that he's one of the lead authors on, and he's trying to get as many people involved as possible. It's an experiment on different tuning standards.
Does it matter if you're a musician?
It does not matter. It can be a musician or not a musician. And it takes about half an hour. I've already done it. It's a little tedious. It's not the most exciting half an hour of your life.
Just like this podcast.
Exactly. But it's science. Give a half an hour to science. That's my pitch.
I haven't done it yet, but I will. Your pitch? I can't believe you just made that pun.
I didn't make the pun. You made it a pun by... You post-punned my pun. You post-punned. The URL is too long and boring to say, so just go to the show page where we will link to where you can get involved. Now, then.
On to...
Scientists have... quote, discovered, unquote, why people find rock and roll exciting.
Oh, no, you weren't going to say that headline.
No, you asked me not to. I didn't say I wouldn't.
What? I'm glad I punned your bad pun.
The reason I decided to go for it, because because for me, this is an example of terrible online, like the bad online reporting that you see often. The actual headline is How Rock and Roll Involuntarily Triggers Our Primal Instincts and, quote, Brings Out the Animal in Us, unquote. And the sub-headline is Scientists have discovered an evolutionary reason why people find rock and roll exciting. It, quote, brings out the animal in us, unquote. Then the first sentence of the story is Scientists have discovered an evolutionary reason why people find rock and roll exciting. It, quote, brings out the animal in us, unquote. And then I don't think
so
I need to tell
only
you
it's wrong, but it's lazy.
The picture of Kiss that they have with the article. Guess what the caption is?
No.
I think you can guess. I won't say it again. Anyway.
I would just like to point out that if one were to read some good reporting on this study or the actual study, one would find out that the animal in us is actually a marmot.
Yes. I always knew the animal in me was a marmot.
Because this came from... All right. What the actual study is a paper by some scientists who have been studying animal distress noises.
Right.
And have a theory. They have been studying,
in particular, marmot
distress calls. And they have noticed that among marmots and other animals, distress calls are what they call non-linear, which means they're very noisy sounds that when animals with vocal cords make sounds in distress, they are usually sounds that have a lot of noise in them. They are not a nicely pitched sound like that little squeak that you just made, but they're more like...
Right. So a linear distress sound would be, please get out of my way. And a non-linear one would be,
Exactly.
Except even that had pitch.
Well, no. But still, even if it has pitch and it has a lot of entropy to it, then it's nonlinear.
Right. So
and,
what?
Oh no. Go ahead.
Please. Well, I was going to say.
Speaking of nonlinear, this product narrative
is not. So what they did is they had the what they called neutral music, which sounds like it was kind of elevator music.
Wait. So, I didn't quite get to the study that bad reporting was on, because that was just the background. So they found that distress calls are nonlinear. And then they had a subsequent study, which is still not the study we're talking about, where they analyzed film scores to see if scary films would have more nonlinear sound in them than non-scary film scores. So basically they were extrapolating, they were seeing if you could push humans' emotional buttons by playing non-linear noise at them. And they did indeed find that, it, particularly in horror films, there are a lot of non-linear sounds in the score. But they count also non-musical sounds, so they were counting up things like screams in the background as non-linear sound. So horror films definitely had more nonlinear sound, both in the music and in the Foley.
Mm-hmm.
Not the Foley, the soundtrack. And then dramatic films had less nonlinear sound, mm-hmm. so less noisy sound. And so they basically concluded that humans, just like marmots, find nonlinear sound distressing. So then, this third study, which is finally the study that we're talking about, was looking at whether it's the music itself that creates this feeling of distress in humans, or whether it's a combination of music and visual.
Right. And so what they did
has absolutely nothing to do with rock music and the animal inside.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's classic.
But here's the thing. So distorted guitar sound, Jimi Hendrix.
We have the samples. You want to play
this? Yes, but I just wanted to say that is apparently nonlinear sound.
Right.
Because it has distortion in it and therefore more chaos.
Yeah, that's where I start to get a little...
I know, it's a little fuzzy.
As a fan of distorted guitar.
Yeah, and also because...
many distorted guitar sounds that I find very relaxing.
Right, and supposedly people's reaction to nonlinear sound is... distress and negative emotion.
Right, but can we play the samples now?
Yes, we can play the samples now.
All right, thank you.
Because I think play the samples now. Or maybe since it's nonlinear, you should play the samples before. We suggested that we play the samples.
Okay, here's a sample of the without the nonlinear. All right, now here is the same example, but with the nonlinear marmot sound, sort of.
So the subjects in this study were asked to listen to music, these two different kinds of samples of music, which were, by the way, were created... in conjunction with an actual film score composer named mm-hmm. Peter Kay and a communications professor named Greg Bryant. And they were asked to rate their emotional arousal, that is just how much emotion, period, the music elicited in them, and then also the positivity or negativity of that emotion, mm-hmm. which I guess you call valence.
Right.
I don't know why it has the same name as that thing that electrons have. Valence.
The psychologists, you know, they all want to be physicists underneath it. Oh. Underneath it all.
Interesting. In any case, so...
that statement is not true.
Apparently, people rated their emotional arousal as negative when they heard the distorted sounds. But I think you had a different reaction to those two clips.
Well, hearing the clips like that, which, I mean, I don't have access to all the clips, and I didn't even read the whole paper, so I don't know exactly how they did it, but listening to those clips myself... it sounds to me it's like you're playing like a nice slow like classical piano piece, and then you set off an air horn next to someone. It's like, well, of course it's gonna like negatively affect you, you know, as opposed to like, you know, just sort of introducing a like distorted sound like that is very different than say, in a rock song where the guitar is distorted throughout or something like that. It's not, it's a very different effect. You know what I mean?
It definitely is more exciting, but that's maybe partially because the first one without the distortion is just incredibly boring. You know, so anyway, then they played these same musical samples over kind of neutral videos.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Just like people walking down the street. People or drinking coffee.
Coffee.
Literally, one of them, I think, was people drinking coffee.
Yeah.
And then they asked people once again what their emotional arousal was and whether it was positive or negative. And they kind of found that the effect was dimmed by having just a neutral video in front of you. So the effect
right.
of the music.
Right. Not the arousal, but the valence.
I think both.
Changed. No, I said only one changed.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I read that differently.
I can read from the abstract their summary, which, if you remember the headline that we started with about, you know, the evolutionary reason why rock and roll is exciting, this is what the actual paper says. These results demonstrate that the perception of potentially fearful or arousing sounds is influenced by the perceptual context, and that the addition of visual modality can antagonistically suppress the response to an acoustic stimulus.
Doesn't that sound like the emotion was lesser?
I'll press pause if you want to look it up. You can double check it. I'll press pause. I'm pressing pause.
Blatant edit. Blatant edit.
Right? All right. You guys are so lucky that we turned off the microphones.
You
are
so
that was like
lucky.
The most boring half hour of our lives.
It wasn't half hour, was it?
Oh my God. No, it wasn't half an hour at all. So basically the conclusion is that the distortion, the nonlinear sounds, the chaotic sounds had less effect on people's emotions, negative emotions, when there was a neutral video present. But it
right.
still caused emotional arousal.
Right.
It just wasn't as negative.
I was right.
Yeah, you were right.
I'm sorry. But I did, I had a summary. I wrote down a summary for this, which maybe will help.
All right.
Yeah, you're looking at me.
No, I just find that really weird. Like, first of all, these are people rating their emotional arousal and then the quality of it. So it's when you ask somebody how emotionally affected were you,
right.
and then separate that from was that emotion positive or negative. That's a very weird split of questions. That's part of why it's so confusing.
Yeah, it is. It's a little confusing. I mean, what I took away, my takeaway from it is, if you hear a scream, it upsets you. If you hear a scream while looking at a puppy, it upsets you less. that's
but you
my...
forgot the control situation in which you're looking at a puppy with really boring music.
Oh, a boring puppy. No.
Which maybe takes us neatly on to our next study.
Let's move on. How about, study says pop musicians are now using sadder keys and tempos. This is a team of researchers went through over 1,000 recordings from the top 40, 25 years spanning 5 decades, so basically from the mid-60s to the present.
So they looked at all 100 songs that were in the top 40 list for the last 5 years of each decade.
Yeah, something like that. So, and what they found was exactly that. What, yeah. No, I don't know if they literally looked at every one.
Oh, it said they did.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
And I looked at the study.
Oh, excuse me. So, yeah, so compared to the late 60s, hit songs are more often in a minor key and with slightly slower tempos. So this is in general.
Really much more often in a minor key.
Yeah, the minor key one is very clear. In from 65 to 69, back in the 20th century, 85% of top 40 hits were in a major key. So that's like bum 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 happy yeah. In 2005 to 2009, only 42.5%.
So half as many songs.
Yeah. So now the majority of pop hits now are in a minor key.
It's a huge
boom,
shift.
Boom, 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 boom. So sad.
I'm looking at
a big
puppy.
Shift.
I don't care.
What's that? Oh, puppies?
I'm looking at a puppy. I don't care.
That's right.
Said.
Just the stats is very interesting. Now, should I start to complain? I probably shouldn't complain yet, but I think that there's a lot more music now that is, I mean, they talk about that, like, this is because the music is more emotionally ambiguous now than it used to be. Now, that's probably true, but...
Some of the reporting compared it to all the rest of culture and how a lot of media, a lot of fictional media across the board is more emotionally ambiguous than it was
right,
in the 60s.
Yeah. And I think that probably is true. That strikes me as...
Sounds right.
Yeah, sounds reasonable. But I also
totally
think that
unscientifically.
I think it's also entirely possible that just the actual key of songs is more ambiguous.
Oh,
in other words, if you like think about hip hop, like there's a lot of like top hip hop stuff in the charts, which you have a beat and you have samples. I mean, one of the things I love about what hip hop has done for popular music is how people just throw together different samples. And they're not thinking about keys or whatever. They just, oh, those two sound cool together. And so you hear a lot of, like, in a lot of hip-hop, you hear samples thrown together in a way that if you, you know, looked at it technically from, like, a Western music, like, scale kind of, that it would not be in tune, that they're not in tune with each other, but it sounds good. So it's there, you know? And I think that's great. Anyway, my point is that there's a lot of music now which is just ambiguous as to what key it's in.
I wonder, though, how many of those are in this kind of top 100 pop song,
yeah,
you know?
Well, except there.
I mean, I only have to wonder because I haven't looked at it, but
right.
But it is the sort of pop charts.
Right. My other criticism, and this is once again, this is just a lay person's criticism of this study. I'm sure they're right about everything. I'm wrong, but my other criticism is just that there's all this dance music that's in the top charts now. In a way, like club music, kind of dance music kind of thing, in a way that wasn't true, say, in the 60s. And a lot of that stuff has kind of ambiguous keys. And then also a lot of, you hear minor chords played in this totally, like, jumpy, kind of happy context. But they're still technically minor chords, you know? Anyway.
But then it becomes interesting that the tempos are slower. Because you wouldn't think that if...
Yeah, except all this... the tempo slower thing is really minor.
No, it is. And some of the reporting said that.
Yeah, sorry. That was confusing of me.
The second bad pun of the...
Yeah. So back then, the average tempo was 116, which is this. What would you say if I sang out of tune? Would you sing on your face with a glee?
Ah!
So... And now
that was a non-linear sound from Haiting over here.
And now the average tempo is 110, which is this. What would you say if I sang out of tune? Would you go and eat cake and say yes? That's not a big difference. That's barely... It's barely a musical difference.
To be fair, I would say that two of the reporting articles that I... Reporting articles, two of the articles that I read about this actually said that's not a very big difference.
Oh yeah, no, I'm critiquing the study.
Well, they didn't say it was a big difference either.
No,
they just
pointed it out.
They
did use that as evidence for their emotional ambiguity and everything.
I also understood from the reporting. Once again, I read the abstract for this piece, but for this article, but for this study, but it's not very extensive. And to be fair, the reporting said that. That was the difference between the fast hits.
Right, okay.
Not an average. The first time that I heard about it when from Twitter or something, I was thinking, well, how an average tempo? That doesn't make any sense because that means that if a couple slower songs are popular, then it takes down the whole average.
Right.
But as I understand it, that's the average tempo of the fast songs that are in the...
I see.
That
so
are in the charts.
Then they had to, yeah, what about songs that are kind of in between? Then they had to
pick.
Yeah,
I have no idea.
They had to pick based on their 20,012 ears and brains, you know.
Well, also, another thing that they said was that that it was actually from 95 to 99 that the slowest tempos were popular and that they've actually gone up since
right.
then. And it is in the decade since then that all that dance stuff has come on the charts.
Right, yeah. No, it's I find the statistics fascinating. I just find some of the extrapolation to be questionable.
Gotcha.
But that's what I do as a skeptic, is I question extrapolation.
Find things to be questionable. I just wanted to quote one thing that was not reported on, as far as I could tell from what I read, that was in the study, which said that the proportion of female artists on the top 100 charts has increased significantly.
That's right. Which is very interesting.
Yes. I don't know what that means, but well, go ladies.
Yeah, go ladies. Now, do you want to talk about the evolving music thing? Which a lot of people sent us this, so thank you all.
Thanks, everybody, for sending us this Darwin Tunes.
Yeah. Yeah. DarwinTunes.org is where you go for the... this is kind of citizen science too, but it's
kind
not really.
Of science.
Is it science?
I'm not sure it's science.
Like, here's a quote I saw on some of the coverage: like, music to making music evolve by itself without any creative input from a composer.
Mm.
And no,
just from a computer scientist.
Yeah, and then thousands of people. So here's what they've done. They took what they sort of considered to be noise. And then they made this program that would it would create noise, and then it would combine noise and sort of make offspring. So it would make two different kinds of noise, and then they had these algorithms that would combine them and make it an offspring based on the sounds. And then through the website, they had volunteers listen and rank the different samples, and the fittest survived.
Right,
so,
how much they liked them.
Right. And so the samples that were liked the most were then
recombined.
They had them reproduce, rebred. and then they just kept the process going.
That's where the creativity comes in, because some computer scientists had to decide how that recombination was going to happen.
Right, yeah. And then also, yeah. So they did this, 2,513 generations, and there were 6,931 people involved in the ranking.
Those are very exact numbers.
Yeah, well, you know, hey, this is a podcast, and podcasts are all about... Wait, I don't... Think before you talk. That's what people always tell me. and I just still don't... Am I still talking?
No, I just wanted to cavil for a moment with the word that you used for these sound samples, which was noise.
Oh, should we play the samples?
Sure. I just want to say that this is not non-linear noise like marmot distress calls.
No, this is not marmot
at all.
Music.
It feels like they start with a kind of music.
Right. So here's a little bit of the... This is the Generation Zero sound that they started with. Okay, and I didn't write it down, but I think this is like Generation 900 or something like that, or maybe a little later generation.
It was around 900. Yeah.
Okay, so
it's so boring. I don't even know what to say.
They're both kind of boring. I personally, as kind of like a weirdo kind of music guy, I actually prefer the first one. I prefer the Generation Zero, but that's just me.
Well, you know, this is a good example of creativity by committee. You basically iron out everything that could possibly be interesting along the way.
And this is about averages. And actually, you know what? You know who had a nice post about this was Jerry Coyne, mm-hmm. the biologist. He had a good post about this. Everyone sent it to him too, because he writes about evolution, amongst other things. And so he had some, let's see, here's a quote from him. Each person has a different criterion for quality. In contrast, there's only one criterion for success in a real evolutionary process. How well a gene makes copies of itself.
Mm.
So this is in the context of him talking about why this is not evolution. And then also, as you just pointed out, you know, the way he puts it is, it's perfect in the sense that big box office Hollywood movies are perfect. They appeal to the most people.
Or right? Perhaps it should be said, they offend the least people.
Right. Half full, half empty. So,
I think there's a vast difference there. Unfortunately. But no, maybe you're right. The most people are willing to shell out $16 to see them.
Right. So, I mean, I think it's an interesting project, and I think it'd be great if they expanded it. I've actually thought about this, having a website where you have both sound and visuals, and you have some process just with the mouse that people just sort of go like in different directions. Maybe say each quarter of the screen has a slightly different variation on what's happening on the screen, and you just move your mouse and it changes. And based on input from people around the world, the thing is constantly changing, and it'd be really interesting. There's a lot of interesting artistic places you can go with this, but in my humble opinion, this is art, not science.
Hmm.
And I say that as a fan of art, not, yeah. That is not a criticism. It's just they're not the same thing, art and science. Sorry, folks.
This is art that's using a sort of false representation of a scientific idea. It's using something that kind of could be described in the same terms as evolution, but is not really like evolution.
Right, yeah. It's interesting. I think everyone, you know, go to darwintunes.org if you want to take part in it and check it out. But do not... base your knowledge of evolution on this project, because it's not what evolution
is.
No,
speaking of evolution and bringing us back full circle to those marmots making nonlinear sounds, I just wanted to...
Get off my lawn! Get off my lawn!
I just wanted to finish with a funny observation of the same group of scientists... continued to study marmots and their distress calls.
And why wouldn't you?
And at some point, they did a study where they were looking at the stress hormone levels in marmots and relating it to their distress calls. And their hypothesis was, since when marmots are alarmed, they make these nonlinear, noisy, chaotic calls, that their hypothesis was that they would have higher levels of stress hormones, and higher levels of stress hormones would correspond to noisier, more chaotic calls.
Oh, okay.
And they found the opposite.
Oh, really?
They found that scared marmots make more musical calls.
Interesting.
They had no idea why.
So the nonlinear, the sort of more noisy thing is more, perhaps more just like a warning, and they're not necessarily actually scared.
Maybe.
But...
maybe they're watching films of puppies.
Maybe. Oh.
Although marmots would probably be stressed out by films.
Yeah, they
of
don't think
puppies.
they probably.
This is getting awfully
all right,
abstract.
We should, yeah. Oh, nice.
How's that for a segue?
So we're gonna try out a new bit. We're gonna try.
Abstract.
Yes, the abstract. So, as you know, we looked through a lot of papers and stuff trying to get ready, find things for this podcast. And every once in a while, we come across an abstract that does not make any sense. And
we were sent this week another sonification, which we've talked about many times.
So many sonifications.
Yes, but Phil Plait, the bad astronomer, sent us a great one this week. Thank you, Phil. And like Phil listens to our podcast.
Yeah, right. No, so we're going to combine them.
Yes, we're going to combine this sort of abstract sonification of gamma rays
with an abstract.
Enjoy!
Music visualization technique of repetitive structure representation to support intuitive estimation of music affinity and lightness. This paper proposes a method to identify and visualize repetitive structures in a pairwise representation of music to support people to imagine their affinity for music and the lightness of music intuitively, or in other words, without listening to it. Repetitive structures in this paper are fragments that a music piece, contains multiple times, and all these fragments may be slightly different, but are perceived as very similar. For example, a tune might have a difference in tonality and could be performed by different kinds of musical instruments. we propose an algorithm to identify repetitive structures in a tune by using a self-similarity matrix. Identified structures are visualized on two kinds of images. One is a colored cylinder of varying diameter, where colors represent...
Thanks for listening to Scopes Monkey Choir from scopesmonkeychoir.com. We are professional musicians, not scientists. If you doubt something we've said, don't believe us. Look it up yourself. Check out the episode page at scopesmonkeychoir.com for references and citations. We welcome your feedback.
Feedback.
Write to us at scopesmonkeychoir@gmail.com or leave a message on the monkey phone
at
347-788-0330.
The Scopes Monkey.